The following is a class on Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter number 4, text number 34, given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Dasadhikari, recorded on June 21st, 2009, in Hamilton, New Zealand.
So tonight we are reading from Srimad Bhagavad Gita, chapter number 4, text number 34. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Tadvidi pranipatena pariprashnena sevaya upadekshyanti te jnanam jnaninas tatvadarshinaha. Translation and purport by the Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Just try to learn the truth by approaching a spiritual master. Inquire from him submissively and render service unto him. The self-realized souls can impart knowledge unto you because they have seen the truth. Purport. The path of spiritual realization is undoubtedly difficult. The Lord therefore advises us to approach a bona fide spiritual master in the line of disciplic succession from the Lord Himself. No one can be a bona fide spiritual master without following this principle of disciplic succession. The Lord is the original spiritual master, and a person in the disciplic succession can convey the message of the Lord as it is to his disciple. No one can be spiritually realized by manufacturing his own process, as is the fashion of the foolish pretenders. The Bhagavatam 6.3.19 says, Dharman tu sakshat bhagavat pranitam. The path of religion is directly enunciated by God. Therefore, mental speculation or dry arguments cannot help lead one to the right path. Nor by independent study of books of knowledge can one progress in spiritual life. One has to approach a bona fide spiritual master to receive the knowledge. Such a spiritual master should be accepted in full surrender, and one should serve the spiritual master like a menial servant without false prestige. Satisfaction of the self-realized spiritual master is the secret of advancement in spiritual life. Inquiries and submission constitute the proper combination for spiritual understanding. Unless there is submission and service, inquiries from the learned spiritual master will not be effective. One must be able to pass the test of the spiritual master, and when he sees the genuine desire of the disciple, he automatically blesses the disciple with genuine spiritual understanding. In this verse, both blind following and absurd inquiries are condemned. Not only should one hear submissively from the spiritual master, but one must also get a clear understanding from him in submission and service and inquiries. A bona fide spiritual master is by nature very kind toward the disciple. Therefore, when the student is submissive and is always ready to render service, the reciprocation of knowledge and inquiries becomes perfect.
Mandeham Shri Guru Shri Jata Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sagana Raghunatan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadaitam Savadutam Padijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakan Vitamscha
So, Srila Prabhupada is commenting on this verse how one should approach a bona fide spiritual master singular and surrender to him as disciple. Last night we heard some arguments that you're not really supposed to approach one spiritual master. You're supposed to take a little from here, a little there, put together your own idea of spiritual life. We heard that philosophy last night. But that is not confirmed here by Srila Prabhupada. Nor is it stated in the verse that you approach many different spiritual masters. It does say the self-realized souls can impart knowledge unto you because there are many different spiritual masters. That's a fact. This category of personalities, they're plural in number. But you choose one particular spiritual master as your spiritual master, and you surrender to him. That is very clear here in this verse. So, why should one do that? And how should one do that? At the present moment, we are entangled in this cycle of birth and death. We have forgotten our actual identity, which we had before we fell into this material existence. Each and every one of us is an eternal associate of the Supreme Person in the spiritual world. We've forgotten our actual identity. And we've taken up so many false identities in this world, thinking this is me. I am male, I'm female, I'm Kiwi, I'm American, I'm Indian, I'm this, I'm that. All on the basis of the body, you see. But that's not the actual self. It's like now I'm wearing this chadar from Vrindavan, India. Do I think I'm the chadar? No. If I take off the chadar, I'm still me, aren't I? Have I changed my different person now without the chadar? You see. So, whether you have this present body or not, your male body, your female body, you see, your Kiwi body, your Australian, American, whatever type of body you may have. Whether you have that body or not, it doesn't matter, because you're still the same person. We have an identity, eternal identity, which exists beyond time and space. But we have, due to a defect in our a bad decision we made, in a measurable amount of time ago, we entered into this dimension of time and space to try to be the lord of this dimension. That's why everyone's fighting with each other here. We all entered here with an attempt to be the lord of this place. And even if we appear to sometimes have that position as prime minister or powerful billionaire or famous musician or whatever it may be, famous scholar, big scientist, No one is actually satisfied here. No one is actually satisfied. Everyone feels, they always feel they're lacking in something. Because this isn't our actual home. If you take a fish out of the water, you may give him all facilities on the land. You may give him a nice Mercedes. You might give him a 12-string guitar. You might give him, you know, $1 million bank account. You can give Mr. Fish a beautiful girlfriend. So many facilities, you see. But can he be happy? No. He's a creature of the water and he cannot be happy in the land. But if you put that little fish back in the water, that's all he needs. He doesn't need all those gadgets and gizmos you give him. He just needs to be back in his original identity as a creature of the water. And then he's happy. So we are all, in case you didn't figure it out, we are all fish out of water. That's the point I'm making. Our water is the spiritual existence. We are spiritual creatures by nature. We're not material creatures. The body is material, but that's not us. Our actual nature is spiritual. So because we're in an awkward position, we're out of our natural habitat, no matter what arrangements we make to be happy here in this artificial habitat, we can never be satisfied. Even if you become prime minister, billionaire, you know, rock and roll star, famous scientist, whatever, you may have some big prestigious position where 200,000 people come and bow down at your feet. You know, you'll never be happy here. Never. Not possible. Because this is not our home. Simple thing. So there is a person who is the Lord of that spiritual existence, and that normally people say God, you see. That's all right, but the word God doesn't convey the complete meaning of that person. God means controller. But that's not all that God does. He doesn't just control. He's not a control maniac, you see. He has much higher functions than just controlling. That Supreme Person, he has all, of course, control is one, but he has five other opulences. In addition to being a powerful controller, he's also very beautiful. He's the most beautiful person. He's the source of all beauty. And in addition to being beautiful and powerful, he's also extremely renounced. He created this whole material world for us. You see, all these planets and all these countries and all these fruit trees and so many facilities. He's created all of it, and he lets us have it to enjoy, you see. He doesn't think, well, I'm going to come here and take charge of this place, and this will be my place of enjoyment, and tough luck for you. No, he lets us enjoy this place. He comes and visits once in a day of Brahma. But he doesn't come to take all of this for his own personal enjoyment. He leaves this for us, for our enjoyment. So that Supreme Person is very, very renounced. And in addition to being powerful, beautiful, and renounced, he's also the most knowledgeable person. He's omniscient. He's absolutely aware of everything that's going on in all times, all places, and all circumstances, past, present, and future. And in addition to being omniscient, he's also the most wealthy person. Everything is his property. He owns absolutely everything because everything is coming from him. Everything is emanating from him. He's manifesting it by his desire that everything shall exist. It exists by his desire, you see. He doesn't require to call in some construction company. Just by his desire, everything exists. And the last thing is he's famous. There's nobody more famous than that Supreme Person. So God conveys one of his six qualities. So Srila Prabhupada has given us the term the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which gives us a more broad understanding of God. Because God covers the first aspect, power. But the other qualities of beauty, you see, the personality of Godhead gives this understanding. See, normally they think that God is an old man. The Judeo-Christian conception of God is some old man with a beard. He's not very attractive looking. He's got wrinkled skin, got a, you know, gray hair and a beard. Maybe even maybe needs a cane to get around, you know what I mean? Because he's very old, you see. This is the idea of God, you see. So this is a very, this is not a very proper understanding. Why would God want to get old? I mean, do you want to get old? You see? We don't want to get old. So why would God, since he's all-powerful, why would he want to get old? It doesn't make any sense. He's under the power of time? No, of course not. Time is one of his energies. Therefore, he keeps himself eternally youthful. And that's the Vedic scriptures describe God as Navi Yovanam. He's an eternal youth. If you study the Vedic scriptures and you study the Bible, the Quran, you see the Vedas is so much more logical than any other description of God given in any scriptures, you see. The most logical. Jnanam teham savijnanam, you see. Idam vaksham yasheshyataha. Yajgatva neham buyo yajgatyava mamashishyate. Krishna says that this, I shall now declare to you this knowledge, both phenomenal and numinous. This being known, nothing further shall remain for you to know. What does the Bible say? I have more to tell you, but you're not ready to hear it yet. In the book of John, Christ says, I have more to tell you, but you cannot hear it yet. Right, you're not ready for it yet. There's a similar statement in the Islamic literatures that there's more, but it's not being revealed yet. So just take the scriptures themselves, side by side. The Vedas, in the Vedic scriptures, Bhagavad Gita, it is said this is the highest knowledge, there's nothing beyond this. The Bible says there's more knowledge beyond this. When the Islamic literatures say there's more knowledge beyond this. This is not our bias. This is just pure scholarship. Pure scholarship. The Vedas say this is the ultimate knowledge. The Bible and the Quran say this is not the ultimate. It's good, but it's not the ultimate. You see? So therefore, we can understand the relationships between all the scriptures of the world. It's like an abridged dictionary and an unabridged dictionary. You know that little pocket dictionary you can stick in your pocket? Those are bona fide definitions. So the Bible and the Quran, they're like pocket dictionary. They give you the basic ABCs of spiritual life. But, you know, the DFDEFGHIKLMNOPQRSTUVWXYZ, that is contained in the Vedas, all the details. How many names of God are given in the Bible? Maybe one or two. How many names of God are given in the Vedas? At least 1,000. You say, why is that? Well, how many names do you have for snow here in New Zealand? Snow, and that's about it. How many names do the Eskimos have for snow at the North Pole? Hundreds and hundreds of names for snow. This type of snow, that type of snow. Because why? Because they know snow intimately. We do not know, thank God. We do not know snow intimately here, you see. But they know snow intimately there. So the point is, the more you know God, the more you have can designate him with different names of his different qualities, his different characteristics, his different pastimes, his different relationships. So in the Vedas, because the sages knew God intimately, much more than anyone in the Christian or Islamic tradition, therefore they had thousands and millions of names for the Supreme Person, describing his, all his different aspects and qualities, characteristics, relationships, etc. So, if you want to realize God, we recommend you study the Vedic scriptures, especially Bhagavad Gita. We're studying it tonight. If you can simply master this Bhagavad Gita, we guarantee you, you'll become a self-realized person. We guarantee in this one lifetime, if you will seriously study and try to apply these teachings of the Bhagavad Gita, you'll become a completely self-realized soul. I guarantee it. To every one of you here in this room tonight, I promise you, that if you will study this Bhagavad Gita as it is, by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, which is available here if you don't have a copy, right? And you follow these teachings, and I'm willing to guide you and help you. I'll give you my card. You can write me emails. I'll personally guide you how to practice it and apply it with no charge, just as my love offering to you. I guarantee you, you can become a fully self-realized soul in this lifetime. You will come to the point where you can see God face to face. You'll come to that point where you can see God face to face, eye to eye. Perfect self-realized being, if you simply follow these teachings. So Krishna is recommending we approach his representative. Arjuna didn't approach a guru. He just approached Krishna. Why? Because Krishna is also a guru. He's the original guru. He is called Adi Guru in Sanskrit. Adi means beginning or original. So the original guru is Krishna. And who else is the guru? That person who represents Krishna perfectly, he is also guru. Krishna describes this principle in chapter number 4, text number 2. Evam parampara praptam imram rajarshayo vidu sakaleneha yoga pranantapa. What is it? Sakaleneha mahata yoga nashta pranantapa. This knowledge was thus received through the chain of disciplic succession, and the saintly kings understood it in that way. So, this is the way this knowledge is understood. If you don't have the direct opportunity to be a disciple of Krishna, as Arjuna had, then you have to find someone who is in the line of succession from Krishna. You have to find a bona fide spiritual master who is in the line of succession from Krishna, and he can then enlighten you in this science. Because it's just like in the Olympics, they have that Olympic torch that goes all over the world. You don't have to be the original torchbearer. You just have to have the bona fide torch passed to you, you see. And then you can pass that bona fide torch on to somebody else. It's not that you have to be the original runner, you see, who left from wherever it is in Athens. You just have to have the torch. That's all you have to have. So that the Vedic wisdom is compared to a torch. Om Jnanatimanandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Nama. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of my spiritual master, who has so kindly come to me, who am blinded in this dark ignorance of material life, and he is forcing my eyes open with the torchlight of Vedic wisdom. So all we have to do is find a teacher who is giving us this Vedic wisdom purely as Krishna gave it to Arjuna. If we will hear from that teacher, if we will drink that knowledge through our ears into our heart and let it and digest it fully within our heart, we will have transcendental realization. That's a fact. We will have an awakening of divine consciousness within us. That's a fact. So I was fortunate to come in direct contact with such a spiritual master, the one who's on the altar here, his deity form. This is my beloved spiritual master's deity, his divine grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. He agreed to accept me. He specifically was asked if he would accept me, this individual, myself, as his disciple, and he agreed. The spiritual master has to agree. You just can't decide, well, I'll be a disciple of so-and-so. No, it's a two-way street. It's like if you want to marry somebody, they have to agree. You just can't say, well, I'm going to marry them, and that's it. No, it's a two-way decision, you see. If you want to be a disciple of a spiritual master, that's great. Now, the spiritual master has to agree also that, yes, I would like to have you as my disciple. It has to be a two-way thing there, you see. So I was fortunate that in spite of whatever disqualifications I was possessing at the time, Srila Prabhupada very kindly accepted me as his disciple. And he trained me how to practice this science. And he passed this torchlight to me and he said, now you pass this to the whole world. That was the order he gave to me and his other disciples. He said, now you become guru and you deliver the world. That was the order he gave us. So therefore I'm traveling all over the world trying to pass the torch on to as many people as I possibly can. And empower you that you can also pass the torch on to others so we can enlighten the whole world with this knowledge and everybody can become free, everybody can become happy, we can have like a paradise on this planet where everybody is happy and people are not being exploited and abused anymore, which is happening more and more all the time. It's a horrible nightmare. But we can put a stop to all of this abuse, child abuse, women abuse, men, everyone's being abused nowadays. We can put a stop to environmental abuse. We can put a stop to all this abusive consciousness and bring back the God-centered, Ishavasya society, non-exploitative, love-based society, you see. Even the government should be based on love. You see, in the Vedic culture, you had a king that everybody loved the king. They followed the rules of the society not out of fear of being caught by the police, like nowadays. They did it out of love for the king. Because they loved the king, they loved their leader. To please him, they followed the laws of the state. Prabhupada explained that in Mauritius. That the basis of a God-conscious society is actually love. It's not law, you see. Our modern society is based on law and backed up by the police and the military, you see. That's not a proper human society. It's based on fear. Fear of being caught and being handcuffed and put in some jail cell. That is not the basis for a human society. The human society is based on love, you see. That I love my leader. You see, I love him. I know that he loves me and he cares about me, and therefore I love him also. That's how the society should be set up, you see, on the basis of love. Whoever is in charge of the society, we should love that person because he knows that he truly loves us. He's not simply taking some office to stuff his pockets with as many dollar bills as he can before he gets thrown out of office, you see. So the bona fide spiritual master has a very important role to play in all of this. He is meant to educate the society in general, everyone throughout the society, how to reestablish the love-based culture as opposed to the law and fear-based culture on the planet, you see. So therefore, the spiritual master has to be of exemplary character. He has to be motivated by love, you see. No other motivation. Not that he's thinking, well, you know, I'd like to be a famous guru, you know, with a big name in the lights, you know. No. Lord Chaitanya said, "Nadjanam." That means I have no desire for followers. "Nadanam," I'm not doing it because people give me donations. No, there's no desire for wealth, no desire for followers. Or how about beautiful girls, you know, saying, "Oh, Gurudev, Gurudev, Gurudev." No. No desire for beautiful women either, you see. We see these yogis, sometimes they do that. They have become a big guru and they have sex with their female disciples. Or even their male disciples now. It's gotten so degraded, you see. So such things cannot... The bona fide spiritual master is pure. He's completely free from material desires. His only desire is to be absorbed 24 hours a day in hearing and chanting about Krishna and giving that wonderful benediction to everybody that he meets so they can also taste the highest pleasure of direct association with the Supreme Person 24 hours a day. So if we find such a person, then we should obey this instruction of Krishna. We should approach him. We should inquire from him submissively. That means not argumentatively. Inquiry means whatever you don't understand, you should bring it out. Not that you think, well, Gurudev, it's very nice what you're saying, and yes, 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 but inside your mind, thinking, but at this point, it doesn't make sense to me. No. If something doesn't make sense, you bring it out. You inquire. Bring your doubt forward so that it can be addressed. Not that you challenge, but that no, this is wrong. No, you say, I do not understand how this is right. You see, that's not Gurudev, this is wrong. No. Guru Maharaj, this I don't understand how this could be correct. It doesn't make sense to me. Please explain it in a way that will make sense to me. You see, this is the method. And rendering service. Well, why do you have to render service? Can't you just inquire? And here, isn't that enough? Why does Krishna say render service unto the spiritual master? Prabhupada said, do not take the knowledge gratis. In other words, unless there is, the spiritual master is acting out of love to give you this knowledge, you see. He's not getting paid for it. He's even taking great difficulty upon himself physically to travel all over the world and give this knowledge. It's not easy for him to do that. So he's acting out of love. So the point is, you need to reciprocate that love with the spiritual master. He's giving his love to you. Now you give your love to him. And that through the potency of that loving exchange between the master and the disciple, You go beyond just theoretical knowledge. You get actually transcendental realization. You actually have an awakening of the divine consciousness because of that loving exchange with the spiritual master. So giving service to the spiritual master is very important. When Prabhupada was here, everybody was fighting for the chance to render personal service to Prabhupada. You know, everybody's looking, where can I get my chance? Well, there he's going. Let me open the door for him. And he gets in the car, you know. Everybody, just imagine you're at a festival with 500 devotees, and everybody wants to serve Prabhupada personally, and they're all crowding around him. You're just looking, will I get my chance to help him put his shoes on, open the door for him, close the door? Everybody was looking, where can I get my chance, you see? Actually, I remember I got one chance. I couldn't believe how lucky I was. I was in Atlanta. There was a big gathering of devotees there, about 300 of us in the temple room. And some scientists came, Dr. Wolf from Germany. Prabhupada very much liked Dr. Wolf, and he liked Prabhupada also. You see him in some of the videos in L.A. He has the glasses, and he's in the videos. You can see him, Dr. Wolf. He was one who asked Prabhupada. When Prabhupada said it is madness, he said, wouldn't it be better to say stupidity, Srila Prabhupada? You may remember that video. He said, wouldn't it be better to say stupidity, Srila Prabhupada? And Prabhupada said, yes, madness is the sum total of all stupidities. So anyway, that Dr. Wolf, he had come to hear Prabhupada speak. Now, here we have so many chairs here. In the Atlanta temple, there was no chairs. And Dr. Wolf's an elderly gentleman, you see. So, Prabhupada said, someone should get him a chair. He wanted him to be able to sit comfortably in a chair in the temple room. So, all the devotees were thinking, oh, Prabhupada wants somebody to get a chair for Dr. Wolf. Everybody's looking around, where's the chair? Everybody wants to be the one that gets to get the chair, you see, because Prabhupada asked somebody should get him a chair. And I couldn't believe my good luck. I couldn't believe it. I was standing by the Vyasasan, this chair that Prabhupada sits on, the back of the temple room. I couldn't believe it. Behind the Vyasasan was a chair sitting there. And nobody saw it except for me. I couldn't believe it. Wow, this is amazing. No, everybody's looking around for a chair, but nobody can see that chair except for me. I couldn't believe it. It was like some mystic Shakti, you know. Everybody else became blind to that chair. I was the only one who saw it. Oh, Krishna. So I got my chance that Prabhupada to do a service actually to one of Prabhupada's guests. And that's considered even more exalted. If you can serve, the servant of the servant, you see. He was coming in the mood of serving Prabhupada and helping his mission, you see. So if you can serve a servant of the master, that's considered even more advanced. So I got the opportunity to do that. And it really was one of the sweetest moments of my life to get to do that, to bring that chair for Dr. Wolf. It was a really special moment in my life. So this is the mood. We wanted somehow find the opportunity. How can I serve the spiritual master, you see? Can I open the door for him? Can I shut the door for him? Can I, you know, help him put on his shoes? These menial services are very powerful to engage in these menial services for the spiritual master. Can I offer him prasadam? Can I serve him prasadam? In this way, these menial services for the spiritual master, after you've heard the knowledge and then you render service, that rendering of service then turns the theoretical knowledge you have going through your intellect and it takes it into your heart where you have transcendental realization. So it's very powerful to actually serve the spiritual master as described here. So anyway, now I can ask if there's any questions.
I try to read your daily emails, and in one of the emails, you had mentioned that your spiritual master should be alive.
Yes, that is the Vedic system. Yes. One takes diksha from a living guru, yes.
Mm-hmm. So So you take initiation from your spiritual master, and if he leaves his body after a few years, then how do you continue?
Yes. That whatever instructions you once you make that connection with a bona fide spiritual master by initiation, then that spiritual master, if you're actually following his instructions, he actually enters into your heart. Actually, you enter into his heart and he enters into your heart at the moment of initiation, if you take it seriously. So actually, there's never any really separation after initiation. It may appear to be separated from the material viewpoint, but for someone who's actually taken that initiation in the full spirit, of, as described in the Bhagavad Gita, the spiritual master arrives and resides in your heart. So you're never separated from him. It's not some mystical thing. You just have to follow his instructions. It's a simple thing. Whatever instructions he has given you, you carry those out to the best of your ability, and that way he'll always be residing in your heart, blessing you. More and more realizations on the science. People ask me, what was the nicest moment you ever had with Prabhupada? I said, well, right now. I've been associating with him constantly for 38 years. This is the most ecstatic moment right now I've ever had with Prabhupada. In this way, you see, spiritual master enters the heart at the time of initiation. He resides there eternally, provided you follow his instructions. Now, if you deviate, that's another matter. Then you got to somehow get repaired, you know. Somehow reestablish your relationship. But the key is, if you're smart, you'll never break the vow, you know. I vow to chant 16 rounds and follow these principles. I'm never going to break the vow, no matter what happens. If you do that, the spiritual master is with you in your heart for all of eternity. He never leaves him. It's a great question. I appreciate that. Do you have any questions? No? Okay, go ahead.
So, I ran into financial difficulty, and I heard someone tell me that Ganesha is a money god.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know what to do. I just lit
the... Did you get rich after that?
Yeah, like that day.
How much?
$60, and the next day 40.
You didn't get 100,000?
No, but I'm hitting that
one. Okay.
But what should I do to please her? Or, you know, and
her?
Is it a her?
Him.
Ganesha.
Yeah. Ganesha's a man. If you call him her, it's not very pleasing for him. First thing is, don't call him her.
I didn't know.
Well, you're asking me a question, and I'm answering you.
Okay, so that's... And do I keep lighting incense?
You know what the best thing you can do that'll please Ganesh even more?
What?
Ganesh is one of the empowered agents of Krishna. Whatever benedictions Ganesh gives you, it's all coming from Krishna ultimately. He's the god of all the gods. So if you can please Krishna, then Ganesh will flood you with even more benedictions. So the best thing you can do is chant Hare Krishna.
And who is the ladies behind him? Are they...
What is that?
The ladies behind him.
That's probably... Who? That's Lakshmi Devi? Who's the lady behind Ganesh in the picture?
Lakshmi
Devi, yeah.
If he's sitting in the lap, then it's Mother Parvati.
Yeah, in the lap it's Mother Parvati, his mom.
And what do they do?
Hmm?
What do they do?
Oh, the Lakshmi Devi, she is bestower of wealth. Actually, Lakshmi also means money. But there's two different ways you can get money. One is by the material way, by working hard for it and also for praying for Lakshmi, give me money, trying to directly to get money. If you do it that way, sometimes you will get it and sometimes you won't. It doesn't come steadily. But there's another way. Another way to attract wealth is this, because the Lord of Lakshmi or money is called Narayan or Krishna. He is the actual Lord of Lakshmi, Narayan or Krishna. If you become a devotee of Krishna or Narayan, then Lakshmi, who remains always at his feet constantly, she will constantly shower you with her blessings. So if you go directly after money, sometimes you'll get it, and sometimes you won't. Just like sometimes it's hot in the seasons of the year, you know. Sometimes, if you go after money directly, sometimes you'll get it and sometimes you won't. But if you go for devotion to the Supreme Lord, who is the Lord of Lakshmi, then whatever money you need will come automatically by his grace, constantly, for your whole life. You won't have to worry about it anymore. So those who can only see the short-run picture, they worship Lakshmi and Ganesh for the money, see? But those who can see the long-run picture, they worship Krishna. I'll give you an example. There's a difference between short-run and long-run. Now, when I was in high school, in Sanskrit we call it Shreya and Preya. When I was in high school, it was in Houston, Texas. And Houston, Texas is one of the most humid, uncomfortable places in all of the U.S. I mean, it's really humid, and it's really unbearable. So it's a very air-conditioned city. When I went to school, this was 1960, the early 60s. Even though people had, the offices were air-conditioned, people had air-conditioned houses, they decided the kids in school should not have air conditioning. I don't know why they did that, but it was really rough in May when we got near the end of the spring semester and summer was coming. Those fifth period, which is like 2 o'clock in the afternoon, you know, 1 o'clock in the afternoon, sixth period at two o'clock in the afternoon, it was just really intolerable sitting in those classrooms. But so some of the students, they thought they would be one up on all of us. They dropped out. They got a job at the gas station. They saved up for a hot rod. Those were the days when hot rods were really, everybody was in the hot rods. All the top 40 songs were about hot rods. And that was the cool thing in those days, back in the early 60s. Little Deuce Coupe. And so many songs were popular, describing my hot rod, you know. That was all the songs. They were about hot rods. Hot rods and surfing. That was the two big things. The culture, the youth culture of the day. So anyway, they get their hot rod, and they get out and they're in front of the school, you know. Rum, rum, rum. They burn rubber up and down the road in front of the high school. So all of us sitting there, dying of the humidity in fifth period physics class, could hear them out there having a great time with their hot rod and be envious of them, you see. That when they enjoy like anything. Wow, you know, 300 kids are hearing them out there in their hot rod. Actually, it was 1,000 of us, I think. 1,000 of their friends are there in their cooking in fifth period class and hearing them out there with their hot rod having a great time, you see. But 10 years later, where is he? And where's all those kids that suffered through fifth period physics class? Now they're sitting in an air-conditioned office with, you know, good-paying jobs. They went on and got a college degree. And he's still working at that damn gas station trying to just make ends meet, you see. So who had the short-range vision and who had long-range vision? The students who stuck it out and didn't drop out of school and got their degrees, they had the long-range vision. He had the short-range vision. Well, this isn't any fun sitting in this school. I'm just going to get my hot rod, work at the gas station, pump, you know, get a hot rod and have a great time, you see. So worshiping Ganesh, that's short-range vision. Quick money, you see.
Yeah, it always works.
Quick money. Quick money. Yeah, quick money. It's quick money. It's like the hot rider, you know. I want some quick thrill, you know. Yeah, I'm going to get me a hot rod. I'm going to burn rubber up and down in front of the high school on Gessner Road, you know. All the students will be, oh, I wish I could be out there in a hot rod, you know. But then, in the long run, you see, if you can connect in love with that person who's the source of all the wealth, that person will become, this is a very high level understanding, but the person who acts, Krishna or God, the Supreme Person, who owns and controls everything, If you become totally sold out to him, he'll become your personal property. That person who owns and controls everything, he'll be under your control by love, you see. So, therefore, those who are actually intelligent, they offer respects to Ganesh as a great devotee of the Lord, but they focus to his master, Krishna. They focus their attention and their devotion to his master, Krishna. So I appreciate very much your question. Thank you so much. Another question?
So you light incense to Ganesha and it's all right?
Lighting incense, Agavati, to Ganesha, is that all right?
Here's what you do. To really please Ganesh in the best way, you get a picture of Krishna also.
Yes.
Here's what you do. Get a picture of Krishna. Offer the incense to Krishna first. And then that becomes called, then offer that incense that you offer to Krishna, then offer it to Ganesh. He is much happier to get the remnants of Krishna's offering than to get the offering directly. You'll please him more that way. If you want to please Ganesh in the best possible way, offer the incense to Krishna. And then after it's offered to Krishna, then you give it to Ganesh. And then he'll be more happy with you if you do it that way. He'd rather have the remnants of Krishna's offerings, because Krishna is his master, you see. He'd rather have the remnants of Krishna's offerings than to have you directly offer to him. That's the way to do it. You want to really please Ganesh in the best possible way, give him the remnants of Krishna's offerings.
No, me and Maddie will do that tomorrow night.
What is it?
They're going to do that tomorrow night.
Okay, very good. In this way, you can awaken your love for Krishna and Ganesh will be really happy with you. He will shower his mercy like on... We may come to you and ask you for all of our financial needs. Yes.
The more money we get, does that mean the more happy we become?
Well, if you think that you're the proprietor of the money will not stay with you. That's one of the fallacies, you see. But if I think this money is the property of God, and I must use it in his service, then he will give you unlimited millions and billions of dollars. If we think, oh, very good, I've got this money, it is mine. Then you won't have so much money coming. But if you see, I'll recognize you one question at a time. But if you recognize that this money is all the property of Bhagavan, the Supreme Person, it's all meant to be used for his service, then that Supreme Person will give you unlimited money. He can give you the whole universe. If you will engage everything in his service, he can give you the entire universe, you see. So why settle for a few dollars when you can have the whole universe? The devotee of the Lord, he can have the whole universe to engage in the service of the Lord. All right, now your next question.
Could I be the president of the New World Order political party?
President of the New World Order?
Political party.
Oh, there's a certain party here called the New World Party?
New World Order.
Or do you want to start one? Is you starting this new party now?
Already started.
It's already going? Are you a candidate?
No, I'm the president. My own idea.
It's his own.
Oh, you started it yourself. How many members do you have in your party right now? One?
4,000.
4,000?
It took me 3 years to get 4,000 members.
Mm-hmm.
And can I still please Krishna,
So are you their candidate for president?
It's my own party.
Yeah, but you form the party, so do they have a meeting? You have a meeting of the party, and they voted you to be the candidate for president. Or are you just doing it on your own?
All my friends are helping me, and
so you're running for president of New Zealand or some other country?
It's got international membership.
It's an international membership.
Oh, yeah, it's not running for a political office in New Zealand.
Yes, it is.
It is.
Every country around the world, international membership, that's why it's called
don't do that. Hold the hand. Okay, well, that's great. So if you would like to actually be successful in bringing in a new world order, then you need to study very carefully the Bhagavad Gita. Because this Bhagavad Gita is the guidebook for those kings who rule the entire planet Earth. You may not know, but the Vedic kings, up until 5,000 years ago, ruled this entire planet for millions of years from India. There was one world order, and it lasted up until 5,000 years ago. And this book was the guiding principle for those persons who ruled the entire planet for millions of years. So if you would like to be the ruler of the world, we welcome them. But we can tell you that the way that you can qualify yourself to lead the world, to be our political leader, to be our king, or whatever you want to call the position, is if you study carefully the Bhagavad Gita and apply these principles perfectly, then the entire world will be inspired to follow you and you can lead us. We would love it if you qualify yourself. So do you have a copy of Bhagavad Gita? Do you have this book?
No, I don't have this book.
You need to get this book. We have them here. Can you get one tonight?
I've got no cash on me at
the moment. What about Ganesh? Thought he was giving you all this money.
We already spent about $50 to $80 today. We already spent our money she gave us today.
I thought you were loaded. Anyway, when next time Ganesh gives you some money, come over and pick up a Gita, because this will qualify you to be our leader. If you can read and follow these teachings perfectly, you'll be qualified to be the leader of this whole planet. Why only this planet? The whole universe you can lead. Why only one planet? Why not the whole universe? You can be qualified to lead the whole universe if you can read and perfectly follow these instructions of the Bhagavad Gita. You can become the leader of not only this planet, but there are beings on other planets too.
Okay, I don't want to be the ruler of the world, but that is one of our policies.
What do you want to be then?
I want to be the leader of the party. I want to clear the way for the leader by setting up this new world order and calling world elections and abolishing the United Nations with the world government.
Well, I think it's a great idea, but if you will study Bhagavad Gita carefully, then you will understand perfectly how to bring in the new world order. Because this is the guidebook that was used by those back when we had a wonderful, perfect world order. This was the guidebook for that world order. Before 5,000 years ago, the Vedic kings ruled the entire planet Earth. It was under one king. And there was no environmental problems. The administration was so perfect that nobody would even die an untimely death. No son would die before his father died. Everything was perfect. All the laws of nature were going on in perfect harmony during that world order. So if you're interested in a new world order, you need to see the original world order, what it was like, and bring it back to how it was originally. And then we'll be very indebted to you if you can dedicate your life for this purpose. But you kindly study Bhagavad Gita as it is by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, and you will get perfect knowledge how to bring back the original perfect world order to this planet. It flourished for millions of years, up until 5,000 years ago. You see. So any other questions from someone else now? Yes.
Elaborate on conditional and unconditional love for Krishna.
Yes. Conditional love is not love, it's business. Then, my dear Lord, I will worship you if you give me this, 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 and if you don't, I'll teach you a lesson, I'm going to deny your existence. That's called conditional. It's not love, you see. Conditional love is not love. Love means unconditional. My dear Lord, as Lord Chaitanya said, you are my worshipful Lord unconditionally. Whether you handle me roughly by your embrace or leave me brokenhearted by not being present before me, you are free to do anything and everything you want to do with me. I'm simply your servant. That's all. That's unconditional love, you see. Love means unconditional. Conditional means business. I flatter you, my Lord, because I want this, 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 this. And if you don't give it to me, forget it. That's not love. That happened in World War II, you know. In Germany, Hitler was, boy, it was tough near the end for poor old Adolf. He was sending everybody, every man was being sent to the front lines. The grandfathers, the fathers, the husbands, the brothers, the sons, every man was being sent out, being slaughtered, you know, being decimated on the front lines. It was a horrible mess at the end for Hitler. And all the ladies were going to church and praying, oh God, please bring back my father, please bring back my grandfather, bring back my husband, bring back my brother, please bring my son back from the war. And so many of them were killed. There was a huge rise of atheism after World War II, you see, in Germany. Because all they prayed, intensely begged God to bring back their beloved father, grandfathers, husbands, brothers, and sons, and it didn't happen. So they denied God, you see. It's all right, atheist. So as long as we approach God to fulfill our material desires, it's not love. And we can easily reject him also in that mood. We don't feel he's not giving, he's not answering my prayers, and I give him up. It's a big difference, conditional and unconditional. Any other questions?
People who are on the path of spiritual advancement, do they get punished more quickly or instantly for any wrong that they do compared to the others who are not?
It depends. For one who is on the pathway of self-realization, does he get, does he suffer a karmic reaction quicker or more severely, you could also ask, than someone else? It depends. Krishna, there are two different energies at work. There's the material energy and the spiritual energy. For a person who is simply engaged in the material sense gratification, they are strictly under the laws of karma. Now, when a person takes up the self-realization path to the extent, whether it's 1%, 5%, 20%, 80%, 90%, to whatever extent he takes up the self-realization path with all seriousness, to that extent he is now under the influence of the spiritual energy instead of the material energy. And there is no hard and fast rules. You see, the material energy is mechanical. It's like a machine. It's very strict and it's very mechanical. But the spiritual energy under the direct supervision of Krishna, you see. And Krishna is like the difference between a department store suit or a custom-made suit. Krishna will custom fit, he will make a specific program just for you. Whatever will best facilitate your coming to him as quickly as possible. If being punished quicker will bring you quicker, he'll do that. If not being punished at all and not having to suffer the reaction at all will help you to come quicker, he'll completely nullify the reaction. So the answer is, it depends on what Krishna tailor custom designs for you out of his loving relationship with you. He'll do whatever helps you to come to him as soon as possible because he wants you back. He's been waiting for millions of lives for you to take up devotional service. And when you do that, he's going to custom fit your program in a way that you can come to him as soon as possible. So you could get a worse reaction, you could get a late reaction, you could get no reaction. It simply depends on what Krishna understands will best facilitate you coming to him as soon as possible. There's your answer. Any other questions?
This is about regarding Atma. Atma.
Atma, okay.
Just trying to understand the connection. Like, for example, if one eats food, okay, he eats through the mouth, and the tongue gives the taste, and the taste gets... sort of the mind realizes that taste and enjoys that taste, and maybe intelligence helps it to understand the taste.
Yeah.
Now, where does the Atma fit? Or Atma just is a known...
Yes, so a good example is given in the Vedas. Consider a chariot, the passenger on the chariot, the driver of the chariot, the reins, and the horses. That's how I consider that simile. The senses are the horses, the mind is the reins, the intelligence is the driver, and the Atma is the passenger. If you think in those terms, it'll help you to see everything properly.
So by that logic, the Atma is the...
passenger.
Yes, it is the passenger, or we can say it's only the enjoyer. It doesn't do
yeah.
anything.
Yeah, he's the enjoyer of the ride. Hopefully, if the driver is driving correctly, he's enjoying, otherwise he's suffering.
Yes.
If the driver is taking it off the edge of a cliff, he's not enjoying the ride.
Yes, he's the experience, ever experience.
He's enjoying our suffering. Yeah. The Atma is enjoying your suffering. That's right.
Yes, so it's not a doer of anything. It's just an experience of good or bad.
He may or may not be the doer, depending. Actually, he has the power to direct the driver. In one sense, he is the doer. Because he has the power to direct the driver or not direct the driver. If he tells the driver, go wherever you want to go, and the driver takes him to a brothel, then he gets the reaction for having gone to a brothel and engaged in illicit activities. Because he gave the driver the freedom to take him to a brothel. But if he said, no, take me to the Hare Krishna temple instead. He is, in one sense, he's the doer. In another sense, he's not the doer. It's the intelligence, the mind, and the senses that are actually, you know, carrying it out in one sense, executing it. But according to his desire, he's getting what he wants. So sometimes they say, well, if I'm not the doer, why do I have to take the karma? I didn't do it. It's just the modes of nature did it. Why should I get the karma when I'm not really the doer? That's one argument we hear. But it's like someone say, well, I joined Al-Qaeda. You know, I became an Al-Qaeda terrorist, you know. I joined Al-Qaeda. And, you know, Osama sent me to blow up the Parliament building here in Auckland. It's not really, I didn't really do it. It was Osama bin Laden. I'm just an agent. So you can't punish me. I didn't do it. I was just a dumb worker for Al-Qaeda. Well, but you made the choice to join Al-Qaeda. So therefore, you get the reaction, even though you were just an instrument in the hands of somebody else. You still get the reaction for having blown it, and they'll, you know, you'll be executed or given life in prison because you blew up the Parliament building and killed so many senators or members of Parliament. So in the same way, even though the material nature is actually doing it, all these activities, because you agreed, because you chose to be under the material nature, therefore you have to take the reactions of everything you did. Just like another example, if somebody gets drunk, and if somebody gets drunk enough, they can actually do things and not even remember having done them. They can commit a murder and come out of their drunken stupor and not even realize they killed somebody. They don't even remember what happened. Well, the judge let him off. Well, Your Honor, I was drunk. I didn't know I had a gun and I shot somebody. Well, that's all right then. We'll let you go free. Of course not. He has to suffer the reaction. He chose to get drunk, to get way, you know, get really, really drunk. That was his stupid mistake. Now he has to pay for it. Even though he doesn't remember having murdered that person in the bar, you see. Still, he gets the execution. He gets the guillotine or the hangman's noose or whatever. You know, lethal injection. I don't know if they have capital punishment here.
No.
Yeah, it's crazy. Now they want to abolish capital punishment. Why? Because the leaders themselves are criminals. Actually, it's very good. Capital punishment is good. You may say, well, it's cruel. Of course, if they get the wrong person, then it is bad. I grant them. But in the Vedic culture, the kings were very expert. They had great powers to actually know who was guilty and who was not. So they weren't punishing innocent people. The advantage of being killed when you murder someone is then you get the karma off your chest immediately. Otherwise, you have to sit there for 30, 40 years in prison. You never get the karma off your head of having murdered somebody. That means you have to take your breath again and be murdered. But if you can be put to death by the state, immediately you get the karma free. You start off the next life without having to be murdered by somebody. It's a karmic reaction. So it's actually kindness upon the murderer to give him capital punishment. But these modern-day politicians, they have no conception of Vedic wisdom. And, of course, on the other side, because sometimes they do, you know, condemn innocent people. So that's an argument in favor of abolishing it. But the real thing is they should become the best solution is they should become, we should have qualified leaders who actually are empowered to clearly see the difference between right and wrong. So the persons who have committed a murder can be relieved of that karma as quickly as possible by capital punishment. So anyway, that's a little aside, but the point is that yes, you do take the responsibility, even though you're not the doer, because you made the choice of being under the influence of the material nature. So whatever you, quote, do, unquote, while you're under the influence of the material nature, you take the reaction for all of it.
So just extending the same question further. So after death, depending upon your, say you did bad deeds, and so you go to the Narak. So the Atma suffers there? Or
going where?
What do you call the hell?
Of course. It's very hell. It's horrible in hell. Oh, it's horrible. The death canon describes, it's heavy. You wouldn't want to go there. It's like the worst nightmare you could ever have, and it just keeps going on and on and on and on and on. You know. For those who are too lusty, wanting, they just, you know, they're always after illicit sexual connection with women. They go to a hell where they have to embrace a red-hot iron form of a woman. They're forced to hold on and not let go, and it's burning them. It's burning their skin. They have to hold on to that form of a woman, you know, red-hot, molten iron form of a woman. They have to hug it tightly, and they can't let go, even though they're burning. Because it's happening in their subtle body. You see, if it was happening in a gross body, your gross body would die in a few minutes. You'd be dead, and it'd be all over. Because it's happening in the subtle body, they don't die and they have to keep holding on. There's all kinds of, you wouldn't want to go there.
So it's the subtle body suffers or the Atma suffers?
The Atma, because it's identifying with the subtle body. You see? The Atma misidentifies with the subtle and gross bodies and therefore suffers like anything because of that misidentification. That's called false ego. You see, the false ego is what causes the suffering to happen. Because you identify thinking that you are that subtle body or that gross body, therefore you suffer like anything.
But they say, like, the Atma, you can't, nanam chindanti shastrani, nanam dehati pavaka, na chainam kledentam, na shoshati maruta. Means the Atma, you can't cut it, you can't burn it, you can't dry it.
That's right. But when the Atma misidentifies with matter, it suffers like anything. Do you think the Atma is not suffering?
I'm inquiring. I don't know.
You ever suffered? Have you ever suffered?
Yes,
then we have scientific proof. The Atma suffers. You are scientific evidence right here. I have a specimen right here. Scientific evidence. You sometimes suffer. You are the Atma, and you suffer. Because of ignorance, you're identifying with the subtle and gross bodies, therefore you suffer. That's a fact. So to get free from suffering, you have to revive your original consciousness of I am the eternal spirit soul, servant of Krishna. And then when that becomes fully awakened, then no suffering, you'll never suffer ever again in any condition. But as long as you didn't misidentify with this gross and subtle bodies, you're going to suffer lifetime after lifetime after lifetime. That's a fact. There's no escape. Any other questions? Yeah.
How is it like to be near such a potent personality like Srila Prabhupada?
Inconceivably wonderful. Inconceivably wonderful. It was just, it's like being with Krishna in the spiritual sky. That's how potent Prabhupada was. Wherever he was, it was, that place was transformed in the Goloka Vrindavan. It was amazing. It was just a mystical experience to be with. Absolutely. I remember I was living in Florida. We were, talk about, you know, comfortable place. Florida is a very, we were in northern Florida, so it wasn't excruciatingly hot and humid. It was a wonderful climate. And we were used to that, those nice warm winters and very nice comfortable northern Florida climate. So Prabhupada came to Atlanta, which is a few hours north, up near the Smoky Mountains. And there happened to be some winds blowing down from the Smoky Mountains that weekend, and it was cold as hell. And we weren't used to that at all. And there was 300 of us there, and so we were sleeping wherever we could. I mean, the Brahmachari Ashram was maxed out. There was no question of sleeping in the Brahmachari Ashram. We were down in the basement in some decrepit, dark, like in a deep, dark cavern somewhere, you know. Like 50 of us, and one little toilet and one little sink. We had to stand in this huge line. It was really austere, and it was cold as hell. But we were in absolute bliss because we knew in a few minutes we were going to be in the temple room with Prabhupada. We were in complete ecstasy, even though it was hell. It didn't matter because we knew we were going to be with Prabhupada in a few minutes in the temple room. And it was just amazing to sit at his lotus feet. To sit there by Prabhupada and have him looking at the deities. And he said, I was there on his right-hand side. And Prabhupada looked at the deities. He said, Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda have appeared in Atlanta. And I knew he was directly seeing God in front of him. I was seeing some brass statues standing there. But he was directly seeing God, and I knew it. I see. So it was the most amazing mystical experience you could ever hope to have in millions of lifetimes, to be in Prabhupada's presence. That's been. I've been telling you the truth. Absolute truth. There was nothing like it. It's like, you know, in millions of lifetimes you'd have the opportunity to have that experience. It was really amazing. That's the answer. So our time is running short here. It's 9 o'clock. And we are having another program tomorrow night. And you can ask our temple president here, Bhaicharan, where it is. I don't know. I have no idea how to get around Hamilton. I even forget where I am sometimes because I'm just traveling so much. But he knows exactly where the program is and how you can get there. If you'd like to go tomorrow night, you're welcome. I will be coming back to this place for initiation ceremony. So we've talked about initiation. We have an initiation ceremony here on the 4th of July. Saturday evening, the 4th of July, there'll be an initiation ceremony here. You're all welcome to come and participate in the most joyous event of initiating disciples into their eternal identity as Krishna's eternal servants. And if you'd like to get more information, you can go on my free e-course. Just go on the internet to www. That's easy. Everyone knows that. Back to home. BACKTOHOME.com. Back to home. It's like back to your hometown, you know. If you're from Auckland, back to Auckland, you know. Back to home. Back to BACKTOHOME.com. So you can sign up for my free e-course and you'll get an email from me every day in your email box. So, thank you very much for your kind attention. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Bhagavad Gita ki jai.
Tomorrow night,